All right. Welcome back to this week's intervention. I'm Nick, and I'm here as always with Steve. Steve, so I haven't prepared much for tonight, but what do you got for us, buddy?
Yeah, we got a pretty special episode. We're going to tell the true story of Thanksgiving by way of Rush Limbaugh.
Patron of the podcast, Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing, I guess, when, you know, we were going back and forth about what we're going to do this week, and we've done one episode on the World Cup, and I was thinking of doing that, but since I live in America and Thanksgiving's coming, I decided to look up Thanksgiving from a Marxist perspective, and all I got was Rush Limbaugh or the Mises Institute or I don't know what else was on that list. Just a bunch of
right-wing
shit. Failed, and the only reason the Pilgrims survived was because of a free market.
You know, you sent me that, and I was explicitly going out of my way to look for, like, you know, an indigenous Marxist perspective.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show how skewed it is, because the first page of Google was like all this. And again, we found multiple things that were like adjacent to the story that Rush gives us. Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, to get the actual perspective of like the people that were, you know, brutalized as a result of this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to dig deep.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just so funny. Like, you know, people think that they're not like propagandized. I mean, like, this is one of our most propagandized holidays.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just celebrating, you know, getting rid of a bunch of religious troublemakers. That's what the English celebrate.
Kicking them out of England.
Which, as an atheist, it's
extending the empire.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. There you go. Did I send you that stupid reel today about that Australian guy talking about how stupid America are?
Oh, yeah.
Saying they should have stayed because at least they'd have free healthcare.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if it's a good move in the long run, but
I don't think the British are doing so well. So
no, it's all crumbling, isn't it?
Yeah. But at least we have free healthcare, I guess.
Yeah.
So anyway, you want to get into this? So like, this is an article from the Rush Limbaugh website, but it's like a transcript of his show. And I'm not going to do his voice because I've never actually listened. We just listened to Rush like for a second. Because you can listen to this. I had never heard his voice before, and I take pride in that.
Yeah, he's like one of these guys that I know what he stands for.
Yeah.
And I want nothing to do with it. But yeah, it was weird because I'd never really listened to him, because I was like, oh, I should try to do an impression tonight. But like, I just don't think I've got enough yet.
No, I'm definitely not going to try.
And then we also made the point that like, if we were actually like sophisticated podcasters, we would actually play it for you. But you're going to have to listen to Steve's dulcet tones instead.
Yeah. And again, I don't know if it's free to play or whatever you call it, free to use. So
the estate of Rush Limbaugh is going to crush the intervention podcast.
They could.
They could, for sure.
Anyway. So, you know, it's said in, again, I've never listened to him, but I guess it's said in kind of, the transcript is in the way he would say it. So it's a little weird, and I'm pretty sure there's some spelling mistakes in this.
And also some very offensive terms.
Yeah, so we apologize for that up front. And it's strange because he'll say, and again, we apologize for the word, but he'll say Indians, and then he'll say Native Americans, but then he'll just go back to using Indians nonstop.
Yeah, it's almost like a it's like a dismissive mechanism that he's using, right?
Right.
And he's like, well, I'll say what the woke left wants me to say or whatever, but this is like what I really think as a red-blooded, good white American.
Yeah.
You know?
Which, you know. Anyway. So there's some preamble in the start, but we'll just read it. So again, this is straight from his show. So this is how he started. So my second book was See, I Told You So, which I find funny immediately.
What did you tell us? I mean,
yeah, his first book is The Way Things Ought to Be. And the second book is See, I Told You So, which chapter 6 is Dead White Guys or What the History Books Never Told You, The True Story of Thanksgiving.
Oh, man, some more oppression of white people.
Yeah. So now normally what I do is simply read from my first book, but there has now been another book added in the Rush Revere series. And if you haven't seen these, you should probably look them up.
Because we'll link it.
They're comical. It's him dressed up as Paul Revere. And the first Rush Revere book is Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrims. These are children's books that were written to help young people get the true stories of Americans' founding, because so little is actually correctly taught.
I mean, he's right that it's incorrectly taught.
But not that's in the way
for sure
he thinks.
But the correct way to do it is to caricaturize and cartoonify Rush Limbaugh to actually tell you the story. That's the best way to convey the truth of it to children, isn't it?
But, you know, it's interesting because when you talk about education now, you know, obviously the right is, you know, railing against, you know, like wokeism or whatever in our schools. But even before this movement started, you had people like him and people like Bill O'Reilly writing these books about like the real history.
Yeah.
And it's just propaganda.
Yeah. Like killing Kennedy and killing, yeah, you know, all from like stuff. O'Reilly. But it's interesting because, you know, my mother is like, despite my best efforts to tell her that she actually, you know, actually does a lot of socialist things, you know what I mean? And holds a lot of socialist views. You know, she's not what we would consider to, she's not what we consider to be a socialist, like in terms of how, yeah, she identifies politically or anything like that. But she is a school teacher, you know? And I do talk to her about, you know, U.S. history because she does teach like lower grade, like elementary school or whatever. But I talk to her about these things sometimes. And, you know, one thing that I've noticed about her recently is she is really getting onto this idea of just how screwed up our history is in relation to the treatment of the indigenous people here, the Native Americans.
Yeah.
You know, and she's like, I mean, she's getting to the point where she's like, I just can't believe like we glorified Columbus ever. Right. And I only say that here because I think it's going to be the same thing here eventually. It's like where the true history is going to come out and normal people, not these like right wing nut jobs with literally a political agenda, are going to have their say on this matter, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's I think this will be funny because it's going to be good to like laugh at this stuff because like what these people convey is just laughable and ahistorical.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so it continues. In the children's book version, Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrims, I went into a little bit more detail about the Indians, the Native Americans who helped the arriving pilgrims, and what that story actually is, and how the true story of Thanksgiving has been obscured by what is taught, what I was taught, you were probably taught. Here's the version you were probably taught. He says taught so many times.
I know.
And it's like this throughout. It drove me crazy reading this.
I also really like when it's like his true story, the T and the S are capitalized. It's, yeah, like the definitive, the true story.
Yeah. So this is what you were probably told. The pilgrims arrived here after an arduous trip across the Atlantic Ocean. They didn't know why they were, had no idea what to do. They had nothing. The Indians took pity on them. The Indians saw them and the Indians saved them. The Indians taught them how to do things they didn't know how to do, like grow food, catch beavers, stuff like that. Again, just going back to using the derogative term Indians.
Right.
The Indians saved them, and the pilgrims thanked them by growing a whole bunch of food and having this big feast. So the story of Thanksgiving that's taught is basically how, without the Native Americans, there wouldn't be a country because the pilgrims would have died. At least the pilgrims were nice enough to pay the Indians back with a Thanksgiving dinner.
So that's what we were taught.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of like what you're actually taught in like elementary school, he's not that far off.
Yeah,
you know, like that simplified version. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I went to elementary school in the U.S. before I went back to Europe, and that's what I remember.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the essence of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's right in identifying it as
not sufficient,
but he's going to get
real wrong real soon, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Right now. Here we go. Continue. That's not at all what happened. It's not even close to what happened, which is why I decided to write about it. Now, in the Revere book, the children's book, as I say, I went into greater detail about what some of the Native Americans who provided assistance to the arriving pilgrims, particularly a young native by the name of Squanto.
All right, guys, just remember, we're taking a children's book starring Rush Revere, a fictional character, as the real true story and definitive history that we should all be fluent in with respect to Thanksgiving.
Okay, so it continues. Now I'm doing show prep today, and I come across a story in The Federalist. I quote from this website all the time, and I'm reading this story here. And by the way, folks, it is parentheses, chuckles. So I guess Rush chuckles here. I don't know. It's right out of the Rush Revere book, and it's right out of my See, I Told You So book. There's a whole lot of discussion here of Squanto, who he was, what he did, how he helped, the details. The point is, the true story of Thanksgiving is spreading, and I couldn't be happier about that. Bottom line, it is spreading. I'm just going to cut to the chase here before getting into reading the text. The real story of Thanksgiving, going back to the very first early days of the pilgrims arriving at Plymouth Rock, is that socialism failed.
Oh boy.
This is crucially important today because we have just, okay, so this article is from what, probably 2020?
2020.
Yeah, okay. This is crucially important today because we have just elected a Democratic Party that is going to implement socialism if they win two seats in Georgia. They're going to try regardless.
How's that going?
Yeah, exactly. 2 years on. Aren't you glad we live in a socialist country?
Oh my God, it's amazing.
It's like listening to those debates that Turn Leftist does with those guys that are just like those.
Oh, we live in socialism now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. But if they win those two seats in Georgia, you can say goodbye to the United States as you know it. It will become a socialist state. It will begin the process of becoming.
Man, we must be asleep, man. We just don't realize it. It's what we want, and it's going on around us.
Yeah.
But we're just not seeing it, yes, I guess. I guess Dark Brandon hasn't fully unleashed his potential.
You know what proves that we live in a socialist country? As you know, because we train together, my arm is hurt. And I don't want to go to the doctor because I don't want to pay for it.
Yeah.
That's how socialist we are.
Yeah, how socialist we are. I grind my teeth at night.
Yeah.
So I went to the dentist the other day and found out that I needed to pay $500 if I wanted a custom mouth guard to prevent, you know, my teeth from wearing away.
Yeah.
You know, because ideally, I guess I go back continuously to get fillings and, yeah, you know, root canals as I grind my teeth away throughout the rest of my life without some kind of protection.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, no, we're doing real good on that socialist front. You know, I think we've got abortion legalized now.
Yeah.
Weed is legal across the country, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's real good stuff.
LGBTQ all the community's got so many rights now and they're not under threat at all.
No, all the socialist things we want. So good thing Rush died and didn't have to live to see this.
Yeah. Yeah. On the mouth, I do the same thing. I grind my teeth and you can go buy like a rugby mouth guard for like $5.
Yeah.
And just mold it yourself.
Yeah. No, it's just like wild that you.
Yeah. I get it. So anyway, it continues. Well, we're way down the road towards it anyway. So it is crucially important here for people to understand that, to understand this. It is not antiquated. It's not a cliche. It's not something that you can make fun of people about. You know, it used to be when I first started the show in the late 80s, early 90s, if you dared to refer this to the Soviet Union as communist, people made fun of you. I don't understand.
I'm not
that
sure
point.
What he's saying there. I guess in a way he's almost right because at that point, after, you know, with Gorbachev,
yeah,
they were kind of like moving away from communism, yeah, with all like perestroika and all the reforms and the opening up and all that shit. So he's right there. But again, like, it's, you know, it's like we talk about all the time, he's right for the wrong reasons, you know?
Again, he continues. Oh, come on, Rush. You see a communist behind every rock. And they tried to ridicule you out of identifying communists and communism. Castro, the Chi-Coms. I never buckled, but a lot of people did. And they're doing it now. If you say the United States, the Democratic Party, is on the pathway to socialism, they make fun of you. They mock you.
And they're right to do so.
Yeah. They say, come on, you don't believe that. You can't believe that. That's just silly. And they try to mock you and make fun of you to silence you. But folks, it's real. Now, the story of the pilgrims begins in the early part of the 17th century. The Church of England under King James I was persecuting anyone and everyone who did not recognize the church's absolute civil and spiritual authority. Actually, the state.
Okay, so the state is bad.
I mean, and again, there's probably some truth to that.
No, but he's making that reference there in terms of drawing some kind of equivalence between the state then and the state now, right? And of course, like, the state is bad, but we know he's coming at it from some, like, small government Reaganomics type bullshit.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, the point that it's funny that he's saying this stuff about religion and who's in, you know, who are the prominent Republicans now? Like, I mean, I don't know if they're the prominent ones, but people like Green, they want us to live under like a Christian theocracy anyway.
I think Rush would have been fine with that.
Yeah. Those who challenged ecclesiastical authority and those who believed strongly in freedom of worship were hunted down. This is in England in the 1600s. They were hunted down and imprisoned and sometimes executed for their beliefs. A group of separatists, people who didn't want any part of this, first fled to Holland. They liked wooden shoes and cheese and established a community. Again, like, just dismissive of like any other type of culture or practices, right? I mean, yeah, the Dutch wear wooden shoes and they like cheese. So,
like, I mean, just
the
like
point
super,
of like making it so dismissive,
yeah, like, and so pertinent to this story, you know.
Mm-hmm. They were there for 11 years. After 11 years, about 40 of these separatists, who liked wooden shoes and cheese, agreed to make a perilous journey to the New World. They had heard about it, some new exciting place that hadn't been developed. They knew they would face hardships, hardships like you and I don't know, and I'm not preaching to you.
So that's a key thing, this idea that it hasn't been developed, right?
And right.
Like, we'll get into this more and more, but that feeds into this mythology, which is integral to this whole founding of the state, right? That this place wasn't civilized, right? And it's why, I mean, even going back to Columbus, which from the point that he's talking about, isn't that, you know, long ago with respect to that point in time, but, you know, they were able to do this, you know, with the state intertwined with the church, saying that, like, look, these people aren't people because they're not civilized. They don't have civilizations. They're not a state in the sense that we understand it as it's developing right now in England. You know what I mean? So therefore, they don't count.
And it's the same if you read English history when they talk about Africa. It's mm-hmm. the exact same premise.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like we were talking about, you know, with the episode with Levi.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
In terms of like looking to a people with reference to how you understand the construction of society and imposing those same assumptions upon them in order to justify your own bullshit.
Yep. So again, he ended that last bit with, and I'm not preaching to you. And he continues, I'm just telling you. We don't know the hardships these people endured. We can't. We're way too advanced now. People who lived in the 1600s would not believe life today. Snort. Try to explain flight, jet travel. They wouldn't understand it. They knew they would face hardships, but paramount importance to them was living freely and worshiping God according to the dictates of their own consciences and their own beliefs. That's what they were denied the freedom to do in England. On August 1st, 1620, the Mayflower set sail and carried a total of 102 passengers, including 40 of these separatists, the Pilgrim. There were just 40 of them. They were led by William Bradford on the journey across the Atlantic. You talk about something that had to be frightening and scary? The Mayflower was not much bigger than a 50-foot boat and 102 people on it. On the journey, Bradford set up an agreement, a contract, if you will, that established just and equal laws for all 40 members of the Pilgrim community, irrespective of their religious beliefs. It didn't matter what their religious beliefs were. Which, I mean, they were all Quakers, weren't they? Were they Quakers? I thought all the Pilgrims were. I mean, I don't know if Quakers is the right term, but that's that I'm digging way back in memory here.
You might be right. I mean, I thought the Quaker thing more came with like William Penn in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's right. That's
I think the Pilgrims were more of like the Puritans, which mm-hmm. was more of like the Calvinist deal.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, you could be right. I don't know my religious history very well.
Yeah.
These are the laws they were all agreeing to live by. Where did the revolutionary ideas, these laws, come from? We're talking about the Mayflower Compact. That is what Bradford wrote. The Mayflower Compact derived from the Bible. The Pilgrims were a people completely steeped in the lessons of the Old and New Testaments.
Right. So that is one thing that I want to talk about real quick, because it's like they're talking about like freedom of religion and all this kind of shit, right? But like, not freedom of religion for the quote unquote savages that they found.
Right.
And whatever that, you know, whatever that they worship, whatever God or, you know, theological practice that they undertook, you know. So that's the thing. Like, it's always tried to frame, and that's part of this project as well. I mean, from here up to like the founding fathers and beyond, where they try to establish this idea of like freedom of religion, when in reality, and the actual true history of it is, it was that it was a very tight-knit sect of religious people who were trying to escape a certain type of persecution to create their own community within the bounds of this very specific theology, ideology, whatever you want to call it. But it wasn't inclusive.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It was a freedom of Christianity.
Right.
Certain type
freedom
of
this type of Christianity, you know?
Exactly, yeah. They were devoutly religious people. No matter what else is said about them, and even that is denied, they were devoutly religious people. They looked to the ancient Israelites for their example. And because of the biblical precedents set forth in Scripture, they never doubted that their experiment would work. They never doubted they would get to the New World. They never doubted that once they got there, they would thrive. The journey was long. It was arduous. It was dangerous. And when they eventually landed, when the Pilgrims finally landed in New England in November, according to William Bradford's detailed journal, they found a cold, barren, desolate wilderness. Imagine New England as it exists today as nothing but rocks, forest, undeveloped nature in November and getting colder.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he's still trying to present like, oh, this like factual history, but like it's still got like this chosen people trope, doesn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah.
You know,
Undeveloped in the Western European sense, but that doesn't mean shit.
Exactly. There was people already living here.
Yeah. And I mean, I remember I was listening to something and, you know, this was a long time ago. It may have been a Cracked article, but it went into the indigenous peoples, like nations prior to the whites arriving. And I guess there'd been like massive disease that had wiped out a huge percentage of them because they had, you know, they had much more established communities, according to this article, prior to this. But yeah. Then a lot had been wiped out by some disease.
I mean, prior to even Columbus arriving?
Yes, I think so.
Oh, really? Okay. Because I know specifically more about like how much they were ravaged by disease brought about by like Europeans. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But yeah. But I mean, this idea that like no community structure or agricultural practices, bullshit. As we'll see. Yeah. Like it's all bullshit. Yep. I mean, they talk about, I mean, you can look at what I've read more specifically about is just like the vast trade networks that existed specifically centered around like the Mexico area, you mm-hmm. know, like I guess it would be like the Aztecs and the Mayan cultures, you know what I mean? But they had like trade networks that stretched all across what we know today as like the southern U.S. and even up further way into like the north of like the continental U.S. as we know it today as well. You know what I mean? So these were not like undeveloped or uncivilized or unsophisticated nations at all.
There were no friends to greet them. There was no shelter of any kind other than hiding under a tree. There was nothing, folks. It was desolate. There were no hotels. There were no inns. There were no places to clean up. There were no houses. I mean, this was real hardship. The sacrifice that they made for the freedom to worship was just the beginning. During that first winter, remember, they arrive in November. During that first winter, half of them, including William Bradford's own wife, died of starvation, of sickness, exposure to the elements. Now we're getting close to what is taught in school. When spring finally came, and by the way, writing that doesn't do it justice, spring didn't just finally come. It was a survival. It was an act of survival that you and I cannot possibly understand. And here we go with some praise of...
some patriotism, baby. Yeah.
American Special Forces can. Military people who've been trained can understand what the pilgrims were. You and I can't. We've never done anything like that first winter in the New World. They survived it. Spring finally came. They did meet the Indians, the Native Americans who were there, who did help them in planting corn and fishing for cod. They showed them where the beavers were so the beavers could be skinned for coats, other things. You animal rights people are not going to like some of this story, but it happened.
What is the point of that? Such a fucking bitch.
What animal rights people are listening to Rush Limbaugh?
Yeah, I know. He's such a fucking bitch. He's just appealing to his audience. But like, you know, there it was again. And you talked about it off the top where like he throws out like the correct term, or at least, you know, close to the correct term, right? Because, I mean, he's still not talking. I mean, especially in this sense, he could talk about like a very specific nation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But he just doesn't. And yeah. He just throws like he throws out like the pejorative kind of like definitely not socially acceptable term at this point, right. Indians, right? And then says, oh, Native Americans, I guess.
Yeah. And then just goes right back.
And they helped him do all this stuff. But yeah. And like, here's the thing. It's like, they didn't have to help them at all.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
What would have happened if like some indigenous tribe like made their way to like the shores of Britannia?
They'd get killed.
Put into the freak show. You know what I mean? Like, honestly.
Well, they'd get enslaved.
Right.
Okay. But even at this, even with this degree of assistance from the Indians, the Native Americans, there wasn't any prosperity yet. They had the Mayflower Compact. They had these laws they were living by. There was no prosperity. And I wonder why. Now, this is important to understand here, folks, because this is where modern American history lessons end, with the Indians teaching the pilgrims how to eat, how to fish, how to skin beavers, and all that. That's where it ends. And that's the feel-good story. But that doesn't even come close to the true story. You know, Thanksgiving is actually explained in some textbooks as a holiday for which the pilgrims gave thanks to the Indians for saving their lives. It wasn't that. That happened, but Thanksgiving was a devout expression of gratitude, the pilgrims, to God for their survival and everything that was a part of it. So, like, I don't know if this is just me thinking about what Rush Limbaugh represents, but it's like he can't even accept the fact that we should thank anybody for helping other than God and white people.
Other than, like, this God-given American work ethic that we found upon these stolen shores.
They would have survived somehow, even if the Native Americans didn't help them because of God and...
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's
the struggle, like, of the white.
It's like that predetermined thing, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, this is going to succeed no matter what, just because, like, they willed it into existence, which, I don't know. That's just not material reality.
Yeah.
You know?
We're going to get into the good stuff now. Now, here's the part that has been omitted. The original contract the Pilgrims entered into in Holland, they had sponsors. They didn't have the money to do this trip on their own. They had sponsors. There were merchant sponsors in London and Holland, and these merchant sponsors demanded that everything that the Pilgrims produced in the New World would go into a common store, a single bank, if you will, and that each member of the Pilgrim community was entitled to one share.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to get into this.
Are we going to get into it more?
But I mean, he's going to go into, like, how this was socialism, but it's not. It's just debt to a bank. Like...
Yeah, so, like, but, like, this is a trope that comes up to this day, right? Because, like, they talk about, like, these elite corporations and, like, these globalists and corporatists, right, that are fucking Marxists somehow, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the banks are forcing you to do socialism.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So, let's think about that for 1 second. You would have to have the most baby-brained understanding of socialism to believe that a bank would want anything to do with workers seizing the means of production.
Yeah.
Right? But that this is something that gets peddled to this day.
Yeah.
You know, like the socialist banker. And again, it all plays into fucking, like, anti-Semitic tropes, right? Where it's like the quote-unquote international bankers,
yeah,
instead of calling them just capitalists, right? Plays into this, like, Judeo-Bolshevik conspiracy theory that is literally Nazi shit. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. Am I reaching here?
No. I'm not saying anything because I'm in agreement.
So. Yeah.
Okay, it continues. So everybody had an equal share of whatever was in the bank. All of the land they cleared, all the houses they built belonged to the bank, to the community as well.
Okay. Okay.
It's a bit of a contradiction there, but anyway. And they were going to distribute it equally because they were going to be fair. So all of the land they had cleared, all of the houses they built belonged to everybody, belonged to the community, belonged to the bank, belonged to the common store. Nobody owned anything.
Except for the bank.
Yeah. They had an equal share in it. It was a commune. The Pilgrims established a commune, essentially. Forerunner to the communes we saw in the 60s and 70s out of California. They even had their own organic vegetables, by the way. Again, like, another dig just at, you know, just... what he would view as, like, wokeism, organic.
This next part is even wild. Read it.
Yeah, by the way. The Pilgrims, forerunners of organic vegetables.
Okay, yeah. So we're going to ignore human history before, where we're literally eating organic vegetables.
Yeah.
Okay, but the Pilgrims started here, folks, you know? Like, what?
But then he does, of course, what else could there be? No such thing as processed anything back then. Yeah, I mean, and they were probably healthier than we are.
So how are they the forerunners of it, though? I still want to take umbrage with that point.
Yeah. Now, William Bradford, who had become the governor of the colony, because he was the leader, recognized that this was not going to work. This was costly and destructive, and it just wasn't working. It was collectivism. It was socialism. It wasn't working. The first winner... Okay, it says here the first winner had taken a lot of lives.
Winter.
It should have been winter. Okay. The manpower was greatly reduced, so William Bradford decided to take bold action, which I will describe when we get back.
All right. So, like, as Rush breaks for a second here, let's talk about this, right? So we have to understand also the Dutch in the context of the development of global capitalism, right? Because the Dutch did have their own empire of sorts. Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, I don't think it was nearly as powerful as the British or the French.
It almost was at one point.
At one point, it was. But I think at this point, we're seeing them recede into the role that they would actually play. And it was as more of, like, a merchant and financial hub.
Yes.
Right? I do think that the Dutch actually get overlooked a little bit sometimes in these analyses, as, you know, members, you know, as an integral part of the development of global capitalism, because they were essentially like a bank. Like, they still had their holdings and things like that. They still had their companies. They didn't, you know, undertake a lot of like the genocidal, like direct colonial projects. I mean, they still did it, yeah, but not to the extent like that the British or the French did, I think, in a lot of ways. But like, they still provided like the literal capital in a lot of senses for these things to go. So for him to like divorce that fact from literally, I mean, he describes here as it's intended to be like this expedition where these people go and they put all of everything that they gain into like this bank, you know what I mean? I mean, literally, they're looking for a return on this investment for this trip.
Yeah.
Right. So you cannot divorce this from the development of global capitalism either. Right. And right, the Dutch were an integral part of it. And yep, they were playing that role that they, you know, kind of settled into, where they didn't have to be, you know, the grunts on the front line necessarily, but they could finance these trips.
Yep.
For the development, for expansion, for settler colonialism, for primitive accumulation in the Marxist sense.
Yeah, and I think that the Dutch, you know, after they lost, what was it, that's the Spice Wars and all that stuff, once they kind of, as you said, took a step back and acted more as financiers than they did right, anything else. Okay, Rush is back from break now. William Bradford, the governor of the Pilgrim community, saw that none of this was working. The Mayflower Compact was not working. Giving everybody a single share of stock in the common store, in the common bank, was not working. Collectivism. It was as costly and destructive to the Pilgrims as it is and has been to everybody who has ever tried it.
Fuck. Okay. Let's, should we do it now or should we do it later?
Whatever you want to do. Go ahead.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, let's wait.
Okay.
Let's wait, because he's going to get back into it.
Yeah. So Bradford decided to scrub it. He threw it out and took bold action. He assigned a plot of land to each family. Every family was given a plot of land. They could work it, manage it however they wanted to. If they just wanted to sit on it, get fat, dumb, and happy, and get fat, dumb, happy, and lazy, they could. Well, how's that going to happen if they don't have any food?
Yeah.
Whatever. If they wanted to develop it, if they wanted to grow corn, whatever, on it, they could. If they wanted to build on it, they could do that. If they wanted to turn it into a quasi-business, they could do whatever they wanted to do with it. So he took bold action, right? He assigned them. He just decided to ignore everything that came before. I wonder what the banks thought about this.
Yeah.
It's just to go back to capitalism. But anyway, he turned loose the power of the capitalist marketplace long before Karl Marx was even born, long before Karl Marx was a sperm cell in his father's dreams.
Because that's where sperm is made.
Yeah. The Pilgrims had discovered and experimented with what could only be described as socialism, and they found that it didn't work. Now, it wasn't called that then, but that's exactly what it was. Everybody was given an equal share. You know what happened? Nobody did anything. There was no incentive. Nothing worked. Nothing happened.
Yeah, they just basically decided to sit down and die
yeah.
before William yeah. Bradford came and said, you know what, guys? Let's try
free
capitalism
market, baby.
Before everybody dies. And then they all rose up, took up their rakes, yeah. and started planting. And that's what it was. It was just the idea of capitalism and private property that saved these people. That's all it was, Steve.
There's no motive, you know, under socialism. There's no motive to do anything. I mean, that's why America won the space race, right? Because we were incentivized to do that.
Oh, wait. I don't know if we did.
Oh, shit.
Fuck, we didn't. Oh, man. That's why the Soviet Union. No, it couldn't have been like collectivism and socialism that let the Soviet Union beat the Nazis. Could it have been?
Yeah.
It could. I mean, couldn't.
Vietnam's a capitalist like haven
yeah,
now, isn't it?
I mean, Vietnam can't be the place where Vietnam veterans from the United States are actually going to get health care now because they can't get it here, right? Socialism couldn't be the system that's catapulting China into the dominant economic center of the world now, right? It couldn't be the system that never saw inflation, you know, during the time of the USSR. Couldn't be the system that's taken multiple countries out of backwater feudalism and underdeveloped capitalism into havens of literacy and medical development like Cuba, right? Couldn't be.
No.
Couldn't be.
I think we're dumb.
But I'm glad we're getting the true story now.
Yeah, exactly.
So we know why socialism can never work anywhere else.
Totally changing my
thought. Oh, fuck, man. We're going to have to stop this podcast. We're going to call it Intervention Yes.
We're going to call it Takeover Whitey.
Yeah, Takeover
Whitey. Or Whitey Takeover.
Yeah.
Anyway, What Bradford and his community found was that the most creative and industrious people had no incentive to work any harder than anyone else, unless they could utilize the power of personal motivation.
Okay.
But while most of the rest of the world has been experimenting with socialism for well over 100 years, trying to refine it, perfect it, and reinvent it.
Like the Democratic Party, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. The Pilgrims decided early on to scrap it permanently. What Bradford wrote about his social experiment should be in every school child's history lesson. If it were, we might prevent much needless suffering. If the true story of Thanksgiving had been taught for years and years and years.
I mean, it's just like, it's so funny to think, again, like we've already made the point that like he just hit the capitalism button.
Yeah.
But like, I don't care like what ideology you come into a place where you have nothing built, you have nothing going on for you. Probably going to take some time to get going, whatever you got going.
Yeah, and just like completely ignoring the trauma of the voyage and any other thing that could be affecting these people.
Yeah. I mean, I also just refuse to believe that, like, again, we've made the point already, but that like people were just sitting down like dying because they didn't want to work with their neighbor. You got to be fucking kidding me.
You know, like maybe they were pissed off they fucking owed debt to a bank.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. But, like, I can't imagine that, like, these people weren't trying to survive.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe they're trying to survive was making enough for them to survive and not paying the fucking bank back because fuck the bank.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Maybe that's what capitalism really
is. Yeah. He's like, and Bradford's like, you know, guys, we're not really producing enough, are we?
We're going to give the bank its fair share, guys.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, oh, we're doing, I guess, okay. But yeah, who knows? I mean, I don't know what the situation was there. Like, I didn't live at that time.
I'm pretty sure fucking Rush doesn't know either.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And that's the point. Like, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He is inventing his own mythology for his own propaganda reasons is all he's doing, you know?
Yeah.
But like, again, it goes back to this idea that like he acknowledges at one point how, you know, he says it's true. The Native Americans that were there did help them. They did teach them. And you know what? Maybe that had something to do with it. Like, okay, here's what grows in this area. Here's what you can grow. Here's what you can do to build a home that's suitable. Here's some tools that we use. You know, like those are actually like material things that people had to do. And like, of course, there was going to be hardship when you arrive with literally nothing.
Rush continued. So William Bradford, after putting everybody in a common store, the Mayflower Compact, they wanted to be fair. They wanted everybody to have one common share of stock in everything that happened that the Pilgrims produced. And it bombed. It didn't work. There was no prosperity. There you go. That's what's key to him. Prosperity. Not, you know, making sure everybody's okay and safe. You have to prosper. Yeah,
individual prosperity.
Yes. Yeah. There was no creativity because there was no incentive. Here's what Bradford wrote about the failure. For this community, so far as it was found to breed much confusion and discontent. They were not happy. In other words, this community was found to breed much confusion and discontent and retard much employment that would have been to their benefit and comfort. In other words, nobody worked. The way they set it up killed and discouraged work. There was no need. Of course there was a need. These people
he said they were starving and dying.
For young men that were the most able and fit for labor and service, sat around and did nothing. They should spend their time and strength to work for other men's wives and children without being paid for it. Okay, that's like a weird sentence the way he's written it. So he's got it in quotes saying they should spend their time for work, you know, and time and strength to work for other men's wives and children, end quote. And then Rush has said, like, without being paid for it?
Yeah.
Why should they do that? Because money is the only thing that should motivate anybody.
Right.
And then he says again, why should they do that? So they didn't. That was thought injustice. Why should you work for other people when you can't work for yourself? What's the point? Do you hear what he was saying, ladies and gentlemen? I mean, Jesus Christ. It's so, you know, again, I think we've talked in the past about like American individualism. There's no understanding on that side that, you know, maybe you want to do good for your community.
Yeah. I mean, maybe your survival is tied up into the survival of the community because, like, if you survive on your own with a, you know, fat farm producing, but you let everybody die around you, I mean, what are you going to do then?
Yeah, and it goes back to, again, I mentioned earlier, there's like the turn leftist debates when they talk about water right. And these, what, ANCAP guys are like, if I own the water, it's my water. And if you try and take it, it's a, you're, what are they, aggressing against me. It's like, yeah. Dude, come on. In a practical world, people need water to survive.
Right.
You're just going to hoard it yourself.
And it's like these evil socialists, we just want to make sure that no one can hoard that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, basic human necessities.
Yeah. So that just it just depresses me that people actually think like this.
Yeah.
I guess good ones.
And like, I want to go back and read like what Bradford actually wrote about this.
Yeah.
Because I am sure Rush is taking all of this entirely out of context.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, and I'm sure Bradford's no like model for socialism or anything right. like that. You know what I mean? But yeah. like, it's still probably worth going back and reading like that primary source to understand the full story. Because like, anytime like you're taking quotes out and injecting, you know, commentary. Your own commentary in between these like different snippets of quotations, like you can be damn sure that like this isn't exactly what this person was saying at the time.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I just can't envision how, again, they could look at it and say, oh, it's best right now with 25 people or whatever it was, 40 people, whatever he said it was, that like, oh, it's best we all go our own way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The Pilgrims found that people could not be expected to do their best work without incentive. So what did Bradford's community try next? They unharnessed the power of good old free enterprise by invoking capitalism, the principle of private property, all the way back in the 1600s. It was incredible. Every family was assigned its own plot of land, and they could do with it whatever they wanted to do.
So, I mean, I think that's like a total misconception about like what private property as Marxists understand.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, again, when, you know, when the Marxists take over, when the communists take over, they're not taking your like personal property, right? So like they gave people some personal property to, you know, do what they wanted here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So like, and I can't imagine that they could build like a thriving economy just on like trading within their own community and like the capitalist sense either.
Yeah.
And again, that goes back to this idea of like, all right, well, they've got an eye towards making profit for the bank who they're beholden to for financing their trip.
Yep.
But like, you know, you can envision a society where people still have like a little slice of yard where they can like have their own little fucking vegetable garden.
But even then, you're trying to tell me there was no planned economy? So like,
yeah.
Okay, you've got your own property. You
hey,
can do
Bob,
whatever you
you're
want.
You're growing fucking potatoes, yeah. man. We need potatoes.
So everybody, everybody grows corn.
Yeah.
Well, like, where's the meat? Where's the potatoes? Where's the other, you know, there's no plan. There's
right.
no planned
there's
economy
no,
whatsoever.
There's no communication. There's no coordination.
There's
at
no
all.
Community
Everybody's
spirit
doing
whatsoever.
Their own thing, man. Yeah. The invisible hand's going to take care of it because I'm just going to know because you, you know, with your like money that with your pilgrim money,
yeah,
he's going to come and say, Nick, look, you grow potatoes. I'm going to buy them off you. Okay. And I'm going to, you're going to buy my corn off me.
Yeah.
And that's how this is all going to work.
Yeah. Next point. Okay. This had very good success, wrote Bradford, for it made all hands industrious. So as much more corn was planted than otherwise would have been. So when profit was introduced, when the opportunity to prosper was introduced, it went gangbusters. That, my friends, is the essence of the true story of Thanksgiving. Now, this is where it gets really good, folks. So they set up trading posts and exchanged goods with the Indians after they had enjoyed this prosperity. It was not the Indians that brought them to prosperity. It's not said to insult anybody. The Indians assisted in their arrival undeniably. But what led to prosperity for these original settlers was the common store failed. Socialism didn't work. Or debt to a bank.
Yeah, I mean, but like, it's also just not true. I mean, like, the Native Americans
yeah.
could have just fucking killed them
yeah.
and kicked them off and not taught them how to plant.
Could you because imagine how great this country would be if that had happened?
It wouldn't exist.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
Yeah, it would be great. Yeah.
The world might be a better
yeah.
place.
Yeah, the world would definitely be a better place. Sorry, I mean, like, you and I wouldn't be here, yeah. but like, that's, I'm not.
I'd still be in England, I guess. Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be here, literally. Which, you know what? And I'm not so individualistic to say it's like, oh, like, the world needs to be a better place because I'm in it. It's like, no, it, like, would have been better if we didn't genocide
yeah.
how many millions of indigenous people. But, like, he it's weird because, like, he acknowledges that, like, yeah, they did bring them prosperity. It's like, they literally taught them how to survive here.
Yeah.
there's a difference between fucking prosperity and actually surviving.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have made it.
What do you think? Can't,
you cannot, like, you cannot diminish the role of the indigenous people in this.
Yeah. Do you think Rush would have viewed the Native American, the indigenous people's society as capitalist? I think he probably wouldn't. And they were pretty fucking successful for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly
was. I'm pretty sure they weren't looking for individual prosperity.
Exactly. Yeah. These people knew how to survive here. They survived over this vast continent without being beholden to a bank.
Yeah.
Without the capitalist mode of production.
Yes.
You know? So I don't know what that says about like these fucking pussy pilgrims that came over here.
Okay. Rush continues. After his socialism didn't work statement, he continues, it's when they introduced what turns out to be capitalism. They didn't have a name for it, but when they turned loose individual incentive, keep what you produce, sell what you don't need, it went crazy. This is not something they were taught by anybody by self-experience. That sentence sucks.
Does not make sense.
It was not the Indians. None of this is said to put anybody down. Don't misunderstand. Yes, it is, Rush. Yes.
Yeah.
The Indians did a lot of things that helped them, which I'll go into in just a second, but it was their own industriousness. They set up trading posts and exchanged goods with the Indians. They sold stuff to them, and those profits allowed them to pay off their debts to the merchants, their sponsors in London and Holland. And you know what? The success of that colony, after they abandoned socialism and tried what was essentially capitalism, the word spread throughout the old world of this massive amount of prosperity that was there for the taking in the new world. And guess what happened? The new world was flooded with new arrivals. The success and prosperity of the Plymouth settlement attracted more Europeans and began what came to be known as the Great Puritan Migration. So you're right, they were Puritans.
Yeah. But so it's like eventually, obviously, the westward expansion starts, right?
Yeah.
And of course, that coincides with starting to clash with the people that lived here already.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, come take this prosperity, but it comes at the expense of other people's lives.
Yeah. Well, and that's just what capitalism is.
Right. Exactly. That's the whole thing.
I feel like the capitalists just like they identify a moment in time, right? And they don't look at, and if it proves their point, which again, you know, Rush is skewing the history here. Even at this point, he's skewing the history. But if he can find a point, if capitalists can find a point in history that proves their point,
isolated.
They don't look beyond that.
Right.
And the repercussions of what that means. They just look at, hey, if I look at this from my skewed viewpoint and see that, and I can somehow twist this to say capitalism won, and that's what helped these people. Never mind what happened after that. I'm going to use that as to say capitalism is the best.
100%. Yeah, no, because you're exactly right. They look at it in isolation without taking in the totality of human experience across different cultures.
Yeah, because no cultures matter except for theirs.
Right. So it's like it's extremely Eurocentric. I mean, the way we look at the world in general is from the West is extremely Eurocentric, right? Because it's like, you know, it's that classic trope of like the victor's right history. You know what I mean? So of course, but it ignores, and it's like the same thing with like human nature, right?
Yeah.
It's like, what was human nature as defined by the communities that were here already? I'm sure it looks very different than what we would say defines human nature right now, because they lived extremely differently.
Yeah.
And they weren't motivated by, you know, they weren't motivated by profit because they didn't have to be.
Yeah.
They survived. You know what I mean? And again, like it's not to say, oh, we need to do like degrowth, like, or anything like that. Like in the US and Europe, like we need to grow in like a different way. We need to grow more sustainably, but like, it's not to say like, oh, like the places that we've underdeveloped, like should not go through this same level of growth and have like the same, you know, level of life experience that we get to experience because of the riches that we've plundered from these places or anything like that. It's just, the human experience and human nature are defined by the material conditions that surround people in that given historical epoch.
Yeah.
But like, you have such a distorted conception of it, to your point, when you present these histories in these isolated stories that have no context in terms of their history. Because, right, like this, as we've been talking about earlier, this story must be told in the context of the development of capitalism, right? And imperialism. It has to be. There's no other way that you can. It's the only way where it actually makes sense.
Right.
When you place it firmly in the development of European empires, European colonialism. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we've talked about before, empires have always, they've existed for much of human history, you know, but what makes it different here is because it is tied into the capitalist mode of production. Like where Rome was certainly an empire, right?
Yep.
Like there's no denying that, but it wasn't imperialism in the sense that we need to understand it today, because it wasn't predicated upon limitless profits and opening up new markets. It was about plunder and a slave economy, which obviously really bad.
Yeah.
But it is still different from the empires that exist today.
Yeah. It's like a total complete sidebar that, but to go to your point about like a Eurocentric history and how we're all, you know, basically just used to that. When I was traveling, you did that Lord of the Rings episode or Tolkien episode with Turn Leftist and Decolonize Buffalo. And you talk, I think on that podcast, you mentioned Marlon James.
Yep.
So we're, you know, I think we've both read his African fantasy novels. And I think part of the reason those are so difficult to read to start with is they're told from such like an Afrocentric viewpoint, an Afrocentric historical viewpoint, that we're so used to the Eurocentric that it's completely new and different. So it takes a long time to get used to that. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of those cultures didn't have these written histories, right. So we don't have them. So it takes something like that, which is just a fantasy novel. But again, it's something that's like, you know, I've done some, you know, just reading on some of the characters and the stuff, the fantasy and stuff that he uses in that. And they're all steeped in African history and African, right. You know, their stories. But because that's not written and because we don't have that, it's difficult for us to read because it's so new.
Right. But he tried to convey that, like, that experience of like receiving these stories from a, you know, through a verbal medium more so than anything.
Right.
Right. And like, to your point, like, I think he spent like years of researching like all of these oral traditions and like what was written down before even embarking upon that project.
Yeah. And my point just being that we're all so used to these Eurocentric histories that anything that's different to that is somewhat shocking to the system.
Mm-hmm.
And it no one's used to it. And it's hard for people to take on board if you don't really try.
Yeah. No. And just to that point, just like when it comes to like something like Thanksgiving, I think a lot of people listening to this will do that, but I just want to say it for posterity's sake. Go out and listen to indigenous voices, Native American voices on the experience here. I mean, maybe somebody could tell me different. I'm not saying don't go celebrate with your family, because it's a good excuse to get off work and go celebrate with your family. I'm going to do that, you know, but like at least try to understand what that perspective is on this holiday and all these holidays that we associate with like the founding of America, the United States or whatever, because that's a different perspective on the same history, and that perspective still matters.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm English. My whole family's English. My sister was born in the U.S., but she is, you know, my parents are English. My sister's married to an Indian, as in from India, and we're all getting together. So an English family and an Indian family are all going to get together, and, you know, we're going to have a turkey because that's what you do in America. But it's more just, as you said, we all have time off work, and we can spend it with our family and have some enjoyment. But yeah. You need to find these voices that aren't our voices to understand what this means to them as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is kind of why we did it. I think that's why, like, what our voices are, I mean, it's best served as, like, just, like, shitting on somebody like Rush.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah, it's great. And, like, this is obviously, like, extremely ahistorical. It has nothing to do with historical reality. It is just a propaganda project to, again, continue to manufacture consent for the existence of the U.S. as it's constructed today.
Capitalism and whiteness. That's his whole
That's his whole thing. It's not inclusive.
Yeah.
And it's all about profit. It's all about rabid individualism, you know, and that's what comes through here. And like, you know, it goes, when you look at the history of this holiday, I mean, it wasn't even always, I think Washington didn't even conceive of like, he conceived of it as like some kind of like holiday, again, just to like give thanks and, you know, be with your family members. And again, this is no apologia podcast for Washington. Yeah. Trust me on that, you know, but my point is that like, even like these things can change even from these fucking demigod like figures that we hold up, right? Like, even as this nation has developed, we've taken their ideas and said, oh no, you know what, this is okay, but we can take this even further to ensure that we continue to invent the reality around the founding of this nation.
Yeah.
You know, to make it suit our purposes better.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, there's a little bit more in this Rush podcast or this Rush transcript.
He just repeats the same shit. I mean, there's no reason for us to keep going. I think we've made the points we want to make.
Yeah, I think so too. But in any case, you know, I think this was fun.
Yeah, it was definitely
just
fun.
Because, like, you know, Rush is dead, thankfully. And, yeah. You know, it's great to try to dispel a little myth. But we'll post the link to this and also to the Rush Revere series. And, you know, we're obviously sponsored by, you know, the Rush Limbaugh estate. So we'll do that. Yeah.
I mean, the other things, I guess, on today is if you look today, what's her name? The head of Theranos got imprisoned today. But if you look at why she got imprisoned, it was solely for defrauding investors.
Yeah. So it's like Bernie Madoff.
Yeah. So that's, you know, some of these rich white people go to prison, but it's only if they defraud other rich white people.
Yeah. That's exactly what we said in our last one on Johnstown.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It's like, they only get punished when they fuck with other rich people. So,
and the other thing that's, you know, important to me, and maybe I think the majority of our audience is American, so they might not give a shit, but Qatar just imprisoned and deported the majority of their migrant workers that actually built every stadium that is going to be used for the World Cup. So, again, I'm a huge football fan, soccer fan, but if you have any support of workers' rights and human rights in general, you know, you should be boycotting this World Cup that's coming up. It's pretty disgraceful.
Yeah.
I'll stop there.
Yep. All right. Well, happy Thanksgiving and rest in peace, Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah. Good end.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.